the English with Martial Arts Podcast Show.
How you doing? The Habbo radio station everyone loves.
I love them a lot.
Hello and welcome to the English Martial Arts Podcast Show. Now we're going to talk about purring, the sometimes noble and often incredible Lancashire martial art of purring, where a man repeatedly kicked his opponents in competition or victims in self-defence as hard as he could. There were three types of purring in the 18th and 19th century, and the golden age of purring stretched from the late 1700s to the late 1800s. Competitive purring. Here, two men stripped, sometimes naked, and fought it out using clogs. Blows were to be directed towards the feet and shins of opponents. Though, of course, sometimes things got out of hand, and a great deal of money changed hands over these fights. Scrap purring. An argument in a pub or an insult in a street became a duel with two men heading around the back of the bike sheds to settle things. Here, the classic feet-shins rules were not respected, and the game was rather to get your opponent to the floor and give him a bloody great purring. Many accounts describe the crowds rushing up and cheering on one side or another, and these fights took place at almost any social occasion. For instance, in one news report from Nelson, 1874, we learn that no brass band contest there went by without at least one purring incident. Punishment purring. Here, a man or a woman would be overtaken by their enemies and held down while one of the number purred them over. A particularly disturbing version of this was wife purring. Indeed, in the Northwest in this period, the newspapers didn't talk of wife beating, but wife kicking. One reference describes a mob watching to see a wife being kicked by her husband, suggesting that this was acceptable social practice. The thug carried his missus out into the street to inflict his foot jab. Contrast this with one case when a child was kicked by a grown man and a crowd instead quickly intervened. But why did the 18th and 19th century inhabitants take to kicking each other in this way? The answer is simply that they had clogs on their feet. Wooden shoes were capable of inflicting grievous injuries, but special metal-tipped purring clogs, fighting clogs, were also made, and these were out-and-out lethal weapons. By the 19th century, not a Friday or Saturday night went by in many Lancashire towns without at least one purring case and the intervention of the local constabulary. For example, the 23rd of June 1874, a Lancashire newspaper reported a typical catalogue in the small mill town of Oldham. One Joseph Skies had kicked a police constable and several citizens who had tried to secure him for justice. He got a month's hard labour. A man who was not apprehended chased some boys and repeatedly kicked an 8-year-old in the head. In the same year, another newspaper reported, "Day by day we read of kicking cases in which serious bodily injury is inflated, and it not infrequently happens that the kickers are by no means particular who they kick." The practice was eventually stamped out through harsh penalties. In 1874, a 10-year sentence was handed down for purring, which contrasts with the sentence that Joseph Sykes got for setting his clogs on a policeman. There was also the joke that a purring deserves the cat, i.e. cat of nine tails, a lashing. A few examples. McWilliams kicked Tavish 5 times in the 23rd round. Then the latter dropped like a log and refused to go on. His legs from knee to ankle were covered with cuts and were raw as beefsteak. Purring or shin kicking was a popular English folk sport practiced from at least the 16th century and likely before it existed both as a distinct contest of its own and as a facet of certain loosehold wrestling styles such as Norfolk and Devonshire. By the mid to late 19th century, the sport was exported and practiced in America, thanks to Cornish miners residing in Pennsylvania. By the end of that century, the sport had all but disappeared, and now it exists only at fair exhibitions and in the mutated variants seen in children's games. Kicking in wrestling. Cornish wrestlers used the feet for sweeping rather than kicking, whereas kicking the shins during wrestling eventually became synonymous with Devonshire wrestling. However, when Richard Carew wrote his The Survey of Cornwall in 1602, he made no distinctions between the wrestling styles of Cornwall and Devon, implying that the styles of the two areas were synonymous. It appears that the Norfolk style's reputation for kicking preceded the Devonshire, which likely was identical to the Cornish at the time. Charles Layton, the celebrated game chicken, describes tactical kicking in the various techniques he outlines, but it is in his poem that the real possibility of injury is shown. Layton describes the valour willing to face the severely bruised shins that can result. Another replied, "Why, I know too, will stand the kicking till all is blue." Layton himself claimed his nickname because of his own pluck in the face of sore shins. A wrestle took place scarce anywhere, but what I went if possibly could, and for the prize I firmly stood, and as I so well did bear the kicking, the named and called me the game chicken. It wasn't just sore shins that could result, though. As Layton also mentions that one man got kicked so in four rounds that in very few days died of his wounds. Layton's version of good sportsmanship had the wrestlers retire to the public house after the bouts and dress each other's wounded legs. By 1840, it was the Devonshire wrestlers that had taken over the reputation as shin kickers. The principal difference between these methods is that kicking the shins is a part of the Devonshire and not of the Cornish. The Devonshire men therefore wrestle with their shoes on in order not to break their toes in kicking, and each takes advantage of this to bake the soles of his shoes and thereby render his kicking as severe as possible. Thus he who happens to have the hardest shoes has a decided advantage. By the 1890s, the differences between the Devonshire and Cornish styles were still well remembered. The Devonians had a habit of wearing shoes, and the shoes had been allowed to develop into a hideous weapon. The Cornish and Devonshire wrestlers both freely used their legs in the attack. The Cornish man strikes with his heel or instep, using it somewhat as the French athletes in the savate, endeavouring to cut away the other man's legs from under him and thus render him an easier victim. The Devonian not only does this but aims at the shin bones of the enemy in the hope of inducing him through pain or faintness to yield the day. Henry Webster, 22, boatman, was charged with killing and slaying Henry Ashton, alias Hartley, at Shevington on the 13th of July, 1857. Mr. Baggett prosecuted and Mr. Sowler defended. Henry Ashcroft of Orrell, near Wigan, saw the deceased and the prisoner at the canal pier head, Shovington, on the 13th of July. Prisoner, in his empty boat, passed between the two and they began quarrelling at each other. Deceased kicked Webster and afterwards they fell. They then rose and agreed to fight on their feet. They went into the field, stripped. They fought three rounds. At the third round, Webster knocked deceased down. He got up, but immediately afterwards fell and never rose again. The blow given by Webster, his deceased in the side. Deceased wanted to fight purring. The men were both sober. Deceased was determined to fight, sentence 1 month's imprisonment. One of the most brutal and savage fights of which we have ever heard took place on Monday morning last in this country. William Thornley, boatman, and James Rayner, bleacher, made a match to fight for £25 a side. And from what we have heard, there is some reason to believe that there was an express understanding that it was to be a purring fight. That is, that both men would have fully liberty to kick each other, and that for the express purpose they were to provide themselves with shoes or boots for the occasion. The fight took place in a field near Hall, about 2 miles northwest of Bury. The combatants stripped, each retaining only a piece of ragged material round his body, which in the first rush was torn off, leaving both in a state of complete nudity, each wearing only a pair of strong shoes or quarter boots, about 2 inches broad at the toe, where they were bound round with iron. The soles were studded near the toe and heel, with nails having sharpened, jagged, or, as our informant states, pointed heads, thus armed with the means of brutally lacerating each other at every stroke of the foot. They began the fight and managed to stand up against each other, or, in the slang of the ring, to come to time for 28 minutes. During the whole of this time, they kicked each other with a ferocity which their arm and feet prevented from being impotent. Even when their physical strength was almost exhausted, according to our informant, they literally made the flesh fly from the legs and bodies of each other at every blow. And it is stated that at the last kick inflicted by the human who conquered in this savage contest, his shoe was half embedded in the groin of his victim. Rayner, who received this blow, could no longer continue the purring, and Thornley was hailed by the people around as the victor of the day. So that's just a little bit of information about purring. And I may do another podcast about it in its travels from England to America with the miners from Cornwall and Devon that went to Pennsylvania. But for this one, it's over. And if you enjoyed it, please tune in next time. Thank you.
Listen to us, 'cause we listen to you.